And welcome in to another edition of Mile High Magazine. I am Murphy Houston, and happy Sunday to everybody. We're glad you're here. Today we have the folks from Coleman, Colorado in the house. Susan G. Coleman, if that helps you remember, you know about the Race for the Cure and all the other good things they do, the Pink Tie Affair. And we're going to talk about breast cancer. We're going to talk about what they're doing. And we're pleased to have the CEO, the boss, Diane Primavera. Did I say that right, Diane?
Yes, you did. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. And how long have you been there, Diane, with Coleman, Colorado?
I was hired in April of 2017.
So not quite a year.
Not quite a year.
You're probably still getting yourself situated
over
there.
I'm still learning a lot, yes.
That's why I brought Mary Coleman with you to help with that a little bit.
That's right. Mary's the expert on education. So.
And she's with the program. You're the program manager for Mission Initiatives. Did I say that right?
Correct, yes.
Yeah, yeah. Well, let's start with Diane, and let's update things about the Coleman mission and maybe what you guys are doing. Can you help us with that? Diane, everybody knows about Susan G. Coleman or Coleman. Why is it Coleman, Colorado? I've had people ask me that. Why is it Coleman, Colorado now?
Well, Coleman, Colorado serves a 22-county service area. We go all the way up through northeastern Colorado and up through Fort Collins and over to Aspen. So we serve actually 22 counties in Colorado.
So that's why it's Coleman, Colorado. Mm-hmm. And so what's going on with Coleman, Colorado? What's anything new, anything different, any different research things that we should know about?
Well, Coleman has decided to have a bold goal. We've been around, you know, for 25 years, and you know, our mission and vision has always been to have a world without breast cancer. So we have a new CEO at the national headquarters, which is exciting, and she has some really exciting things that she wants to work on. But we have a bold goal by 2026 to reduce the number of breast cancer deaths by 50%. And to do that, we have a couple of things we need to focus on. One is to focus on people with metastatic breast cancer. And the other one is to make sure that we continue our message and get people in for early detection and early screenings.
Gosh, that's so important, isn't it?
Yes.
That early detection is, believe me, I know, been through that. And we'll have to talk about men and breast cancer a little bit too. Guy, I love getting that word out. Mm-hmm. Imagine how stupid we are as men that we can't get breast cancer. Oh, really? You want to see my scars? I'll share the truth. So the bold goal, how's that going so far, Diane?
Well, you know, we are focusing a lot of our research monies on metastatic breast cancer. And, you know, once upon a time when I was diagnosed 29 years ago myself, I believe that they could tell a woman she had one of three different types of breast cancer. Now, they can detect over, you know, there's lots of different subgroups of the cancers and things like that. And there's over 200 different types of cancer, breast cancers now that they can identify. And by being able to identify so many different types, they can better target the therapy. And so they're making really great progress, but we have a ways to go.
Wow. I didn't realize there's 200 different types of breast cancer. Is that right, Mary?
That's correct. With all the different hormone receptors and different ways that the cancer reacts in bodies to different proteins and things that are present in one person's body versus another. And that has opened the door to really specifying what type of cancer, what's going on with that. And as Diane said, then we can provide treatment that is really targeted to that hormone that's going on that suppresses it so that it stops growing. That might work in one patient over another.
And what progress have researchers made about a cure? I mean, is it getting closer all the time? Because you guys have raised millions and millions of dollars, as other breast research groups too. But we don't hear much about the success.
No, unfortunately, the cure is still elusive. We have not been able to pinpoint that specifically, especially when it comes to the aggressive metastatic cancers, breast cancer in particular, in our case, what we focus on. We have made a lot of progress in research. You know, being able to identify 200 different types of breast cancers is a milestone in and of itself. You know, that alone has made the survival opportunities for so many women and men diagnosed with breast cancer that much more positive and likely, as long as it's detected early.
That's always the key, isn't it? It always comes down to that early detection. And Diane, maybe we could talk a little bit about genetic testing. When I went through my breast cancer, my wife's a two-time survivor. In the beginning, when she had it like 20-some years ago, genetic testing, there was a little talk about it. We did it. But now, this last round, Carol last year, me 3 years ago, genetic testing was pretty big. So talk about the importance of that and getting it done.
Well, there is some insurance companies pay for the genetic testing, which is important. It used to, you know, be cost prohibitive, but now it's around $500 to $2,000. Once upon a time, when I went to get genetic testing, it was $4,000, and I couldn't afford it. So it really identifies just a few genetic mutations at this point in time. I know they're working on trying to identify additional ones. There's some upsides and downsides to the genetic testing. Sometimes people want to know because knowledge is power, and it allows them to be more vigilant about their bodies and their treatment and things like that. Other people don't want to know. I have two daughters. One of them wants me to get the genetic testing because she wants to know. Right. And the other one says, please don't do it, Mom, because I don't want to know. I'm going to be vigilant anyway. So there's different opinions about genetic testing from a patient's perspective.
Well, yeah, we did that same thing. And I have three daughters, and they all wanted to know. And the crazy thing is, both my wife and I did not have the indication of breast cancer, which really blew their minds. Well, how do you get it? But doing genetic testing doesn't always mean you won't get breast cancer, does it, Mary?
That's correct. It's actually one of the myths about breast cancer that we're really trying to bust out there in the community, as a lot of people think family history is the only risk factor, the only indicator of somebody possibly getting breast cancer, and that's just not the case. Actually, up to 90% of breast cancers are diagnosed in somebody that has no family history, has no genetic mutation, and that's what our research is still focused on, is trying to figure out what might cause breast cancer to form in one person over another outside of having a genetic mutation, and we just don't know that.
That's why research continues, right?
Yeah, we have been able to identify some things that do elevate your risk outside of gene mutations that might play a factor in somebody having an increased chance of getting breast cancer, but it still doesn't guarantee one way or another.
And what are some of those risks while you brought that subject up?
Yeah, well, absolutely. Well, a lot, you know, being a woman and getting older are our two greatest risk factors, and that's why it's so important for every woman to get screened and for every man to be vigilant about their health and their body, because they're also at risk of getting it. Other risk factors include not having biological children, having biological children after the age of 35, starting your period before the age 12, or starting menopause after age 55. If you did have radiation to the chest before the 1980s, that might increase your risk as well. And so there's a lot of things that play out in a woman's life cycle or a man's life cycle that might be increasing their risk to get breast cancer.
Things to be aware of, for sure.
No, absolutely. And a lot of people think, oh, it's just family history, but it's just not.
Yeah. And we should talk about men and breast cancer a little bit. Diane, can we talk to you about that, about men should be aware that they as well can get breast cancer? And, you know, men are kind of silly. If they find lumps or they find issues, they don't take care of themselves. They have a tendency, oh, it's going to go away or I'll be all right, until it's almost too late. Isn't that true?
That's correct. And men should watch for the same sorts of things that women watch for with their breasts, you know, if they find a lump, if their nipple's inverted, if, you know, different things like that. And what I've recently learned, I think Mary might have already known this, is that a man can carry the breast cancer gene and not know it. We had a man recently that spoke at one of our events who had the breast cancer gene, and he's concerned, you know, that he could pass it on, you know, to his children. So, men do need to be aware of it. And if they've had a history of prostate cancer in the family as well, they're finding that there is some link between prostate cancer and breast cancer.
Well, how would you know if you have the breast cancer gene?
You have to get tested. There's no
other
way.
Purposely get tested,
correct,
right?
Correct, yeah. Undergoing a genetic test, like we talked about previously, is the only way to know for sure if it runs in your family or not.
Wow. Most men would never think of doing that. And maybe one of you guys can explain about the BRCA gene. Because when I went through the genetic testing, they're talking about this BRCA gene. I had no clue what that is, and probably most don't.
Yeah.
If you can talk about that, Mary?
Absolutely. Through research, we've been able to identify two specific genes. They're called BRCA BRCA1 or BRCA2. And if you have the genetic mutation, so we do know that cancer forms because our genes mutate, going back a little bit. And so sometimes that's mutating from lifestyle choices or things that are going on, like some risk factors that I mentioned earlier. Other times it's a genetic pass down, and that's what's causing those genes to mutate and to form cancer. So we know that if you have this BRCA 1 or 2 mutation, you are much more likely to develop breast cancer in your lifetime, because it's a genetic predisposition to getting the disease. So we've been able to identify those two specific genes that are triggers for breast cancer in individuals' bodies.
And that's for men and women?
Correct, yes.
That genetic testing. And can that change? I mean, if you went through genetic testing, oh, look fine, and there's nothing. Can that, over as you get older, can that change? And maybe there might be something to be concerned about.
Not through hereditary purposes. So your BRCA1 or 2, if you have the mutation, that's going to be present whether you look at it or not, and it's not going to form over time. Just because you don't have the mutation does not mean you won't get breast cancer through other, just because our genes still mutate and cancer forms, regardless of, like I said, family history being a part of the problem, or part of what's causing the cancer to form.
Sure.
So if you don't have the gene, it's still important to be vigilant and be aware of all those other risk factors and get annual screenings, both for men and women. But if you have those mutations, you have to be even more vigilant and maybe even take prophylactic measures to prevent it, because your chances are so increased for getting breast cancer.
It just seems the story continues, Diane. Every time I turn around, you hear about somebody else getting breast cancer. And you guys are vigilant about raising money and battling and trying to stop the process, but it just doesn't seem to be getting any better on the outside looking in.
Well, you know, we hear that, but that's probably not true.
Well, good.
I think
I hope I'm wrong.
Perhaps, you know, 1 in 7 women will be diagnosed with breast cancer. And, you know, that could be due to a couple of things. One is that we have better ways to detect breast cancer now. You know, we have 3D mammography and, you know, things like that. So we've pushed early detection, and that's been really important. The fact that we've been able to isolate so many different types of breast cancer and actually target the therapy has given a lot of hope. But as Mary mentioned, cancer is elusive. It's a virus, and it changes, and so it makes the cure a lot more difficult. But if you have early detection, your chances of surviving the illness are, you know, like 95% or above.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah. If you're diagnosed at stage 0 through stage 2, the chances of surviving past 5 years, which is the general measurement when you're talking about cancer diagnosis, is up to 99%. But that decreases to 26% if you're diagnosed at stage 4.
Well, yeah, I would imagine. And I was blessed. I was not even barely stage 1 when I was detected. And I don't know if you heard that story about how I found out about my lump with wrestling with my grandson, and he headbutted me in the chest. I went, wow, what's that? That doesn't feel right. Mm-hmm. And of course, with working with you guys with Coleman, Colorado, I got checked immediately. And my doctor said, well, I think it's a cyst, but we ought to do a biopsy. And he called and said, boy, you got it. But that early detection saved me no radiation, and I had no chemo. It was like, got it, surgery. Had a male mastectomy. Everything is cleaned out of there, and my health has been very good. But to go through that process, that was such an education for a man, because since my wife was diagnosed, and of course she gets her annual checkups and does her own self-exam, for me to have to go through that, I had to do a mammogram. It was like, I really felt sorry for the technician who had to give me a mammogram. So I'd never done a man before. I said, well, let's work together and do the best we can. But you don't have as much tissue. I go, sorry. Let's just do it. Yeah. And then it all turned out well. But I find now that my daughters, who are pretty young yet, they're getting mammograms already. And I know, is that still a struggle with insurance companies? I mean, do you have to have a history of that, or... Even if it's not a direct history, like a mom or a dad, or if it's a grandma, can you start getting early mammograms?
Well, we passed legislation in Colorado several years ago. In fact, it was the legislation that I sponsored when I was in the legislature. And one of the things that we wanted to make sure the law said was that people who are at risk would have their mammograms paid for by the insurance industry. And so, for example, my daughters, when I was diagnosed when I was 38, and they're supposed to start mammography screening when they're 28, 10 years prior to when I was diagnosed. And so because we've written the law that way, insurance pays for that examination.
That's very good and mm-hmm. very helpful. But my daughters really haven't had an issue with that. In fact, a couple of you actually had MRIs, and thank goodness, no problem. But it seems like it's loosening up as far as the insurance companies working with those that have had a history of breast cancer. And let's just back up a little bit. Mary, I'll address this question to you. Our listeners may not be familiar with terms like aggressive breast cancer or metastatic breast cancer. Can you maybe explain what that is?
Yeah, well, like we were saying, there's different types of breast cancer. And when it comes to, there are some cancers that are we considered aggressive. One is called triple negative breast cancer, which means that they're negative for 3 different types of hormone receptors that they test for when they first identify that it is a cancerous tumor, and they do the initial a conotype and figure out what's going on there so they can have the treatment done. And so those aggressive cancers can be at any stage. And if those ones that are aggressive, you want to treat them hard and fast and get in right away. Metastatic breast cancer is a type of breast cancer that is generally, if it's diagnosed for the first time in person, it's generally diagnosed at stage 4. It also could be part of a recurrence that a woman might experience. And that essentially means that the cancer has spread beyond the breast tissue. So it might be in the spine, the brain, the liver, the lungs. Essentially, it's metastasized to other parts of the body. And most of our breast cancer deaths do come from women that have had the cancer metastasize.
It's a tough road if it's diagnosed late, isn't it?
Correct.
Yeah.
Yep. And that's generally when we find that a lot of, and it's not always, because it might be that the cancer was just that aggressive that it went from being non-detectable to being a stage 4 within a year. And so that's why it's also really important for women not to only get annual mammograms appropriate for them and their risk factors, but to also be vigilant and be aware of their bodies and their health. And to, if something changes, even if they got a mammogram 6 months before, to still be confident that they should go to the doctors and get it checked out. Because only a doctor can determine if it's something benign like a cyst or a normal part of changes, or if it's something more dangerous like cancer.
When my wife first got diagnosed, probably almost 25 years ago, the year before there was nothing. And then she went in for a mammogram and they detected something, and it was almost stage 4, just that quick. And the problem was for her, it was so far, it was deep, it was already burning almost through her lung wall back in the, and it just, it was like right to the wall, let's get it all done and do what we got to do. But it was a scary time.
No, absolutely. And it is for a lot of women, you know, especially those that are vigilant and are getting those annual mammograms, and then to be diagnosed so late when the screenings are there to hopefully get the cancer detected as early as possible, if it is going to be present in the body. And so when it is late, it is a shock to some women.
Yep. Sure thing was at our house. Diane, what are some of the barriers that women and men might face getting breast cancer care? That's always a lot of research. I know when my wife was first diagnosed, I mean, I took total control. And sure, you get doctors recommended, but you need to really get out there and find out what's going on, don't you?
Correct. A lot of it is lack of insurance, or people either don't have insurance or they're underinsured. That oftentimes is a barrier, and that's where a lot of Komen dollars come in. We make sure that people who are least able to afford it get the care that they need. So another barrier might be transportation. Oftentimes people don't have transportation to and from medical appointments, and that can be a barrier. We've also found out that there's cultural barriers to getting care and to getting screening. So one of the priorities that Mary identified several years ago in our community needs assessment was that we need to target certain communities in our service area to make sure that they understand that they can overcome the barriers that they have to getting not only screening, but the treatment as well.
Right. And some of the research has showed me, I didn't know this, but apparently some communities have an increased risk of getting or even dying from breast cancer than other ones. Why is that, Mary?
Yeah, well, it goes back to, we don't know exactly why. You know, for African-American women, both here in Colorado and at a nationwide level, they're slightly less likely to be diagnosed than white women with breast cancer, but they're up to 29% more likely in Colorado to die from breast cancer and 40% more likely to die on a national level. And a lot of that we know attributes to African-American women more likely getting diagnosed with those aggressive breast cancers. They're more likely to have that triple negative breast cancer, for example. And there might be other biological factors that we haven't been able to pinpoint quite yet, but I know there's a lot of research focused on identifying why those disparities exist. There's also socioeconomic barriers. Communities that are less likely to have insurance as a whole, they're less likely to have regular transportation to it. They're less likely to have employee coverage insurance. And things of that nature that just contributes to late stage diagnoses and deaths.
And Komen, Colorado, obviously helping these communities, are you not?
Yeah, absolutely. So we have two ways that we go about granting or helping communities. One is through a grant making model. So because we're not a clinic ourselves, we're not medical professionals, we work to identify which of those clinics and hospitals are working with these communities so that we can infuse dollars to help offset those costs of the care that they receive. And that helps a lot. But we also know that it's not just about paying for the care, it's about education and advocacy. And so we also work on the ground by going out and educating communities about what are risk factors, what are screening guidelines, where can they go to get care if they don't have insurance or other resources, and how can we protect their access at a national and state level with policy.
And a couple of other barriers are that oftentimes people don't have paid leave from their work. And if you're the sole provider for your family and you have to take time off to get your screenings, that cuts into your monthly budget. So that's been an issue that we've talked about in the office, how we could address that. And then the other thing is sometimes people who all of a sudden have insurance really don't understand how to use it. So, you know, that's an education process as well.
And how do folks find that out? Can they just reach out to Coleman, Colorado? Is that possible, Mary?
Oh, of course. Yeah, you're always welcome to call or email us. We also, you know, people have stopped by in our office before to ask questions and to find resources. And, you know, we can provide that at the end, or it's just at ComanColorado.org. All of that information is there as well.
And you have a lot of grants. You have a grant program, do you not?
Yep, correct. Currently, we have 14 grants out in the community. Our next cycle starts on April 1st, so we're just finalizing the organizations that will have grants going into the rest of the year, but we do have 14 currently active ones.
And also, doesn't that help you reach your bold goal there, Diane, with all the stuff you're doing and helping people?
Everything we do, we're trying to reach our bold goal. We always have our mission in front of our faces, you know, with everything we do on a daily basis. But yes, that does, because one of our priorities is education, as Mary mentioned, and we're trying to educate people about the importance of early detection. And then, of course, the screening part, our grant dollars pay for screening and they also pay for treatment. So all of that helps us reach the bold goal. Another thing that people don't understand is 25% of the money that we raise goes to our national office, and that's used for groundbreaking research. And next to the federal government, Komen National is one of the biggest funders of breast cancer research.
Isn't it, and I might be wrong about this because I've done some work with like the CU Cancer Research people. Aren't they doing a lot of that breast cancer research right here in Denver? Are they not?
Yeah, there actually is a researcher at the CU Anschutz campus that has a grant from Komen, the national office, to look at the way that the link between obesity and breast cancer.
Really?
Yes. And so she's right there in Colorado. There's also researchers across the country and the world that have Komen dollars that are looking at, you know, every different aspect of breast cancer. There's a woman in North Dakota who's trying to identify a blood or urine test to detect breast cancer.
Wow. How so simple would that
more,
be?
Exactly. Yeah. Might make it more simple and more accessible to women who don't necessarily need to go or don't have resources to go get a mammogram.
And a lot of that blood research seems to be growing because being a man that like a PSA screening, I mean, it couldn't be any easier. It's a blood test. Boom. Go from there. And that's kind of the goal of what Komen, Colorado's pushing for.
Yeah, absolutely. We know that would make a difference for a lot of women. It wouldn't be the only, you know, wouldn't get us ultimately there, but it would definitely keep us in the right direction.
So you guys conduct a needs assessment every 4 years. Can you talk about that a little bit, Diane, what that is?
Yes, Mary actually conducted the last needs assessment, but it's a way for us to identify some of as it says, the needs in our community in terms of breast cancer. So once we do the needs assessment, then we try and target our monies towards meeting the needs of the communities. And, you know, Mary might want to chime in because she did the one before I even came to Komen.
Yeah, how does that all work?
Yeah, so what we start by getting our baseline. What are the measurements that we want to look at? And we use the Centers for Disease Control goals that they set every 10 years on where they want the country to be. So, for example, when we did the last one in 2014, what we knew is that at the national level, the CDC was recommending that 80% of all women were getting screened at least every 2 years from breast cancer. So what we did with that was come into Colorado and look at our 22 counties here. At every level, you can match at the city and county level and seeing, well, who is already getting a mammogram every 2 years, which groups, both by social groups and by geographic regions, are getting screened already as one example of a measurement. And then who is not? And how can we infuse dollars and researches into those communities to help them get closer?
That's big time. That's valuable information, I'm sure.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it ended up being about a 100-page report. So we really take it seriously on, you know, using our limited resources and our trusted dollars that the community is giving us to make sure that it's going to be the most effective. So we're making sure everybody gets across that finish line when it comes to breast cancer and that we're not leaving anybody behind.
Don't want to do that, for sure. That was Mary Coleman, Program Manager for Mission Initiatives with Komen, Colorado. We have Diane Primavera, who's the CEO for almost a year now. Diane, you're getting your feet wet. What did you do before you became involved with, you mentioned legislation. Were you like at the Capitol?
I was a state representative from House District 33, which is up in the northern part of the city, Broomfield, Superior, the Boulder County side of Erie. I was term limited after four terms, and I chaired the health committee for the state of Colorado for 4 years.
Wow. You really know what's going on down there, right?
We worked on lots of cancer legislation.
I'll bet you did. Good for you. That's really good things. And maybe, Mary, we can talk about how Komen Colorado works with other cancer-focused organizations. There's got to be a lot of teamwork and work amongst those organizations for success.
Oh, absolutely. You know, we want to make sure there's two reasons why we really value collaboration in the Colorado community is one, to make sure we're not duplicating resources. If somebody else is already providing something to the community, we don't want to overstep on that. We want to complement what's going on by making sure that all resources and all needs are being met by us and by our partner organizations. And we also collaborate just to make sure that breast cancer is being talked about in correct ways and is on the table. You know, we sit on the Colorado Cancer Coalition, for example, which is housed at the Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment. And they help set standards for screening guidelines for all types of cancers. So we're there to make sure that breast cancer is being talked about and it's being talked about accurately and in ways that's actually going to help the community.
It's good things. Mm-hmm. Diane, maybe you could address about some of, since you're kind of a politician, about policy priorities for 2018?
Yes. Well, for one thing, I just wanted to add a little bit more to what Mary...
Go at it. Go do it.
We decided at the Capitol when I was there that we should form a cancer caucus, which is another way that Komen has collaborated. They've been down at the Capitol working on different public policy issues. I was one of the co-chairs and co-founders of the Cancer Caucus, which continues today. So in that light, when I was down there, I worked a lot with Komen Colorado. Some of the things that we did was we... got the breast cancer license plate on the roads. It used to be committed to a cure.
Sure.
We decided that the only thing it was really committed to at that point in time was building roads. So we came along with Komen and decided to have the Join the Cause license plate. The pink plates are now the, they were like the top four, the fourth most popular plate on the road. And so in order to have that plate, you have to give $25 extra.
Right.
That $25 goes to healthcare policy and financing. We wanted to make sure that we could do that because we could leverage more federal dollars if we put the money in at healthcare policy and financing. So each license plate generates $75 to go for treatment for people who otherwise would have no treatment for breast cancer. So that was one of the things we did. So if you don't have a pink plate, go out and get one.
Yeah.
We made sure that mammography was in statute and that people starting at age 40 and those at risk would have their mammograms covered by their insurance plans. I know one of the things that we worked on that we weren't able to get passed prior to my leaving the legislature was early detection. Because oftentimes if a person gets screened and the doctor finds that there's something funky on one of the pictures, they need to come back in for what's called diagnostic mammography. And diagnostic mammography is not covered, nor are MRIs or ultrasounds typically.
Right.
And oftentimes you have to go that extra step to really diagnose whether or not a person has breast cancer. So that's one of the things we're working on, you know, and... we also have a bill up this year that Komen Colorado is supporting with Representative Michelson Janae, and that's to make sure that people who have metastatic breast cancer, where it's spread to other parts of the body, don't have to go through step therapy, which means if they change insurance plans, they don't have to go back to a different medication that may or may not work. They can stay on the same medication that they have.
You guys are busy.
We are very busy.
Yeah. And at a federal level, too, our office is constantly making sure that federal dollars for research of breast cancer at the Department of Defense and the Center for Disease Control is at a substantial level, or at least at continuous levels, to make sure that that research dollars don't dry up as well.
Good thinking. We're almost out of time here, but I wanted to touch base about some of the fundraising events you might have coming up in 2018, some ones we've done before, and raising money for research. Can we... one of you guys talk about that, Diane?
Well, we have three major fundraisers. Race for the Cure is something that an event that everybody, I think, has heard of in Colorado. And so that's one of our big fundraisers. Then we have the Pink Tie Affair, which is more of a gala type thing.
Right.
This year we had it just a few weeks ago, and it was a great Gatsby theme. It was really lots of fun, and so that raises money for us. And then we have a Snowshoe for the Cure every spring. And that's to stomp out breast cancer as well. The other thing is that people can hold their own third-party rallies, we call them. So we have lots of golf tournaments, tennis tournaments, curling, things like that. If anybody wants to have their own event and raise money for Komen in addition to these three events, we're happy to help them do that.
Yeah, well, the best way is to go to KomenColorado.org, and you can find all information. There's a link to sign up to volunteer for us if you want to give your time. There's a donation link if you're able to financially support our work. You know, and with going back to volunteering, you know, we need help on advisory councils, so So individuals out in the community that help direct where our funding goes, we really listen to them and really want to make sure that we're not just relying on data and numbers to make those decisions. We're also relying on the stories and what's happening in the community. So we always need more people to come in to help that, as well as just putting on our events and other things of that nature.
Well, Diane Primavera, Mary Coleman, thanks for coming in today. Thanks for all the good work you're doing. Keep it up and let us know how we can help you here with Mile High Magazine anytime, getting the word out, okay?
Thank you so much, Murphy.
Yeah, thank you guys. And thank you guys for listening. We'll talk to you next week.